Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I am uncivilized and sinful due to my neglect of Brahminical culture, God consciousness, and cow protection. Therefore, I wish that my kingdom, strength, and riches burn up immediately by the fire of the Brahmana's wrath, so that in the future I may not be guided by such inauspicious attitudes. Purport. Progressive human civilization is based on Brahminical culture, God consciousness, and protection of cows. All economic development of the state by trade, commerce, agriculture, and industries must be fully utilized in relation to the above principles. Otherwise, all so-called economic development becomes a source of degradation. Cow protection means feeding the Brahminical culture, which leads towards God consciousness, and thus perfection of human civilization is achieved. The age of Kali aims at killing the higher principles of life, and although Maharaj Parikshit strongly resisted the domination of the personality of Kali within this world, the influence of the age of Kali came at an opportune moment, and even a strong king like Maharaj Parikshit was induced to disregard the Brahminical culture due to a slight provocation of hunger and thirst. Maharaj Parikshit lamented the accidental incident, and he desired that all his kingdom's strength and accumulation of wealth would be burned up for not being engaged in Brahminical culture, etc. Where wealth and strength are not engaged in the advancement of Brahminical culture, God consciousness, and cow protection, the state and home are surely doomed by providence. If we want peace and prosperity in the world, we should take lessons from this verse. Every state and every home must endeavor to advance the cause of Brahminical culture for self-purification, God consciousness for self-realization, and cow protection for getting sufficient milk and the best food to continue a perfect civilization. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Malitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Vishnu Vishnu. So very interesting and strong verse, which describes to us, reveals to us rather, Parikshit Maharaj's internal character. And it's very many instructive points in the purport by Srila Prabhupada. The first is this rather odd scenario that Parikshit Maharaj, despite being a very saintly king, a very advanced king, has made this mistake. That itself is a little matter for concern. How is it that such a great person would make this mistake? And this is actually one little insight we can get from this verse, this series of verses, that yes, it is a fact that sometimes a saintly person will make a mistake. That's a simple understanding that we can derive. Even the most saintly person will at some point potentially make a mistake. Now clearly the activities of the persons in the Bhagavatam should not be analyzed as if they're activities of the conditioned soul, in that Arjun becomes bewildered just because he's an ordinary conditioned living entity, Parikshit is bewildered because he was hungry. There is always a higher principle behind it. Krishna's plan is always there. But that's not a particularly useful platform to explore the nuances of the verse from. So there are different ways to understand verses and to approach items of information in the Bhagavatam. And often in the purports, Prabhupada takes an activity which is clearly an activity of transcendence, but he brings it and recasts it as an activity which any of us could do with our mundane conditioning. So it is also very useful to consider the state of consciousness that Parikshit Maharaj himself declares that he felt he was in, regardless of whether that's his constitutional position or not. And what is clear here is that due to being hungry and thirsty, Parikshit Maharaj, his good sense was overridden. And he committed this act of actually causing offense to a Brahmana by garlanding him with a snake. It was an insulting thing to do, basically, done out of frustration. Because he was annoyed that the Brahmana had not stopped his meditation and tended to him as the king, as the great king who had arrived in his place. Now, of course, the Brahmana was actually constitutionally sort of speaking within his right not to do so, but he was actually in meditation. So that's another factor. But in one sense, the Brahmana is not obliged to offer respect to the king. It's meant to be the other way around. The king is supposed to be offering respect to the Brahmana. And we see in the Bhagavatam many examples of how this actually takes place. In the example of Jad Bharat, King Rahugan, later on, the king falls flat at his feet when he realizes his great saintly qualities. And so, in one sense, there is definitely a mistake that has been committed here. In another sense, what I've just spoken has many nuances as well. Because when you have a king like Parikshit Maharaj, that king is taken at a different level than just a typical king or a typical kshatriya. There is another aspect that a king is the representative of God on earth. That is, in the Vedic culture, the understanding of the status of a king, that he represents God, God's power on earth. And he's the person under whom everyone is supposed to act and to cooperate. So there are examples of this also in the interaction between Swayambhuva Manu when he comes to see Kardama Muni. They greet each other and offer each other respects. So there is a mutual set of dealings also between one who understands actually the position of a saintly king as being the representative of the Supreme Lord. But then in terms of the hierarchy of the social orders, technically speaking, the king is in a lower status to the Brahmana. So there are all these items for discussion. But what is clear is that Parikshit Maharaj has transgressed the etiquette. Whichever way you look at it, there are various factors by which it could be said that Parikshit Maharaj has not behaved correctly. And therefore he was thinking, I will teach this person a lesson. This is what kings typically do. This is their mentality. When their strength of character is challenged and they feel some insult, they react in this manner, that they have to correct, chastise, make sure the other person learns the lesson. Now, this obviously wasn't so well developed here. All he did was put a snake around the rishi's neck. But still it was considered a mistake. And not so much that he was informed that it was a mistake by someone else, like a teacher. You know, a teacher tells the student, don't do this, it's wrong. Parikshit Maharaj himself, as he was walking away, going back to his kingdom, realized what he had done, realized the enormity of his mistake. And he is now in deep regret. And these few verses explain his thinking. In the previous verse, he says, due to my neglecting the injunctions of the Supreme Lord, I must certainly expect some difficulty to overcome me in the near future. He's at once fearful and also very much regretful. And this is perhaps the trait of a saintly person that we should focus on, rather than the possibility of making a mistake. Saintly persons make mistakes. Maybe a shock, because sometimes we define saintliness as not making mistakes. But what is saintly is actually measured according to Krishna's criteria for what is saintly, not necessarily our own ideologies. And there are numerous examples in the Shastra of saintly persons who have made multiple mistakes. You may remember, Ajamil is one example. He was a vastly learned, practicing Brahmana. And at an advanced age, he became attracted by sex life and fell down with a prostitute. and then from that engaged in many sinful activities. So he's one example, and that story is described vividly in the Bhagavatam. He later rectifies himself because still the Supreme Lord considers him very dear. So although he fell down, he committed many sinful acts, abominable acts it's described, the Lord did not forget him and somehow induced him to name his son Narayan. And that acted as the cause of his salvation. Because when he was passing away and the Yamadutas were coming to take him, he was helplessly simply crying out his son's name, Narayan. Now that cry, which was done without offense, was enough for the Lord to send the Vishnudutas. And the Vishnudutas came and they resolved the situation. They stopped the Yamadutas taking this person away for hellish rectification. There are many others. There's Shobari Muni, who was meditating underwater for many, many years, long, long periods of time. He had mastered many perfections. He was a very advanced person. He had mastered the siddhi of being able to breathe underwater. He was a very capable and competent person. Yet, there was some dormant tinge of lust in his heart. And when he saw two fish mating, that immediately caused that to spring up. And he gave up his meditation and went off to pursue this new project of his mind. So this is what can happen. Sometimes our dormant propensities are there, and years of practice may cause us to forget that they're even there. But they can potentially arise at a certain point. That doesn't detract from the fact that these persons are considered saintly. They are saintly. They're advanced persons. We are always hearing about different mischievous behaviors committed by the demigods. For example, Indra, even Brahma, you know, when he steals the cowherd boys and the calves. There are many interesting things that would be considered an external mistake. Definitely not right to steal the internal associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his cows. It's generally not a good idea to do that. But the fact that he lived to tell the tale is a sign of how Krishna views him. If it was a demon who did that, and certainly there were many demons who tried to steal the cows, you know, some disguised themselves as cows or cowherd boys. Different demons were there. And Balaram and Krishna dispatched them very quickly. They didn't allow an entire year of Leela to go on, where Krishna himself manifested from his internal Shakti. He manifested the calves and he manifested the boys. And he allowed a wonderful pastime to take place. But it gives us a sense of Krishna's interaction with his devotees, whether they do not make mistakes. And he views that completely differently. These are saintly persons. And when we meditate on their glories and their behavior, and actually look at certain incidents that Krishna makes them go through, we can learn a lot for ourselves. This is a very interesting episode where Parikshit Maharaj commits this offense, because it now allows us to understand his consciousness and his actual status. And some of the things he says in this verse are really quite astounding. He says, I am uncivilized and I am sinful. And this is the person who himself was chastising the personification of sin, Kali. Very robustly chastised him earlier on in the chapters. But he considers himself now to be uncivilized and sinful because he has neglected Brahminical culture, God consciousness and cow protection. Now throughout his entire life he has done the opposite. He's protected those things. He's maintained them, he's supported them, he's protected the practitioners from any harm caused by other miscreants. But he's thinking that this act that I've committed has revealed within me a deep tinge of disqualification. And his mood is now one of regret. So this is his regret. And with regret, with sincere regret, there is always a desire for rectification. And he's thinking, let all of these things which could well have been the cause of my developing this pride, kingdom, strength, riches, let them all burn up immediately. by the fire of the Brahmana's anger. Let them burn up immediately. It is better not to have these things. These things are useful when they're engaged in Krishna's service. And so throughout his time as a king, he acquired many riches, he executed his orders nicely, maintained the kingdom, looked after everyone. But now he's saying, let all this go. Let my position, prestige, riches, fame, all of it go, because I can see, I can deduce that this has been a cause of the state of pride and arrogance that I've developed. This reveals to us his character. His character is that he knows what the principles of saintly life are. And he knows what the causes are of misbehavior. Now, we know that sense gratification is, by and large, the cause of misbehavior in this world. There are mistakes, and we read of the examples of mistakes by persons such as this, and we wonder, is there any hope for us? You know, such great persons will make mistakes, and what is the chance for me? You know, I'm insignificant. I haven't done even 1% of the great activities, great devotional activities Parikshit Maharaj has done. And he can be bewildered and make a mistake of this kind, and what is the chance for me? And that is a valid consideration. We should be in that state of humility. That our devotion is probably not enough to guarantee us protection from the mistakes we're going to make in the future. We probably have a long way to go before we can be considered in a category or in a league similar to Maharaj Parikshit. But what we can say is that as one progresses through spiritual life, the mistakes they make decrease. Mistakes of a category which arise from the mind and senses definitely do decrease. You know, there are 5 senses or 10 senses you can like, or you can say, or even 11 senses if you include the mind. You have the knowledge-acquiring senses, the gyanindriyas, and then you have the active senses, the active sense organs, which are the speech, the hands, the legs, the genitals, and the evacuation organs. These are the active principles within this body, apart from the normal knowledge-acquiring senses that we know about. The organs, of course, are the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, skin, touch. But these are all grouped around something which is called the subtle sense, which is the mind. The mind is described as the subtle sense. And all of these objects, organs, concepts are grouped around the mind, which acts as the central sort of interface between sense perception and the conditioned soul. And so the mind is very much at the heart of any activities of sense gratification. You probably know the analogy of the reins and the horses and the chariot, and how, you know, the horses are like the senses pulling the mind in all different directions, and the reins are the mind, and the driver is considered to be the intelligence. It's supposed to be controlling the mind. Now, often in the material world, it happens the other way around, right? The horses are flying wild, they're just going, and they're dragging the chariot and the driver along. And the driver is just being pulled here and there. Well, I was thinking more, it's like the bulls. Just the other day when the bulls came round when the cows were let out, we had the 2 bulls, and they were struggling to control them up there in the circle. If you saw, these two large oxen, and they were definitely giving their handlers a bit of excitement. But you can see, if those 2 large animals go out of control, they can cause some serious damage. So this is our senses going out of control. The senses for a conditioned soul are dragging that person here and there. The senses are directly pulling the mind. It's telling the mind, come on, do this. It's fun. It's worth doing. And the intelligence is saying, oh, what the heck, just go and do it. I can't be bothered. I just need a break now. Just go, just have some fun. But actually in spiritual life or in controlled life, it's meant to be the other way. The intelligence is supposed to direct the mind. towards accepting and rejecting certain things, which is the mind's function. The intelligence is supposed to be the discriminating injection, if you like, that tells the mind what it should accept and what it should reject. And then the mind is supposed to take only those inputs from the senses which are helpful for the living entity's progress. So that's the way, through Krishna consciousness, to turn the whole thing upside down. And that requires discipline. And that discipline is something that a saintly king like Parikshit Maharaj has conducted his entire career with. Discipline. But now he's thinking that at this moment, due to some ill behavior of mind, some arrogance, some deep traits of disqualification, that discipline was lost, and I am now disqualified. So this is a problem. Most people are not interested in controlling the senses. They are rather thinking that their senses are the boss, and that a successful life means we do whatever we want as long as the senses are satisfied. And they consider that to be freedom. But just consider the irony. It's completely the opposite. The senses enslave every single person. Every single conditioned living entity is enslaved by their senses, which are, as I described, dragging the mind, dragging the intelligence towards degradation. Right? And you know the verse that by contemplating the object of the senses, one develops attachment to them. From such attachment, lust arises, lust, anger. Then the mind is bewildered, intelligence is lost. One falls into the material pool. So that's from the second chapter of the Gita. The process of degradation starts from the contact of the senses with the sense objects. So that's material life. That's conditioned life. And it's problematic because it means we don't go up. We remain in the cycle of birth and death perpetually, trying to explore a new sensory option in the next opportunity. And therefore sometimes when a person realizes, and a great person realizes that they've made a mistake, they desire rectification. They don't desire that their mistake is overlooked. You will often hear amongst persons who are more in the mode of passion, they will say things like, just put it behind you, move on. Now that has its certain merits under certain circumstances. But a saintly person doesn't think that. You can see from this example, the saintly person isn't thinking, I've made a mistake, okay, let me forget about it, let me move on from it. He's thinking, let me meditate on this. Let me understand what I've done deeply, correctly. And let me now be corrected, so that this trait of mine will never take place again. He's actively considering how to purify and rectify himself. A person in the mode of passion who is simply after the achievement of the latest objective doesn't care for the development or the maintenance of character along the way. He cares only for the task to be achieved. And their success in life is that more tasks are achieved. As many as possible, actually. And that's not enough, so more. Let's fill our day with even more tasks that need to be achieved in order for me to think that I have succeeded. That's mode of passion. It's there in many people, but it's particularly brought out in today's culture, where unless you are particularly adept and expert at achieving, defining, measuring, doing all these things with goals on a day-to-day basis, you are considered worthless. You're considered careless or useless, or you know, you just don't come up to the standards of modern life. But this is for the mode of passion. This is why when Prabhupada came to the West, he described this entire place as operating on the modes of passion and ignorance. He very much was lamenting in anxiety at the prospect of how to raise these people to the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness is about consciousness. It's not about completing activities. Mode of goodness is an integral requirement for Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means, is our mind, are our activities, is our body, are our entire faculties connected to the Lord? Savai mana Krishna padaravindayor vacham si vaikuntha gunanu varnane. Maharaj Ambarish, it's described, Karauharer Mandira Marjanadishu Shrutim Chakara Chuta Satkatodaya. It's described that Maharaj Ambarish, with his hands, he would cleanse the temple of the Lord. With his mind, with his thinking, he would engage his mind at the lotus feet of the Lord. With his mouth, his tongue, he would speak the glories of the Lord. With his ears, he would be hearing the words of Krishna or words about Krishna. That is the complete absorption of a person's physical characteristics. Shri Shri Radha Gokulanandai Namah. That is the demonstrated example of a person's complete absorption in consciousness of Krishna and utilizing all our activities to serve that consciousness. Not using our consciousness to serve the conduct, to serve the execution of activities. Ticking off the goal is not the goal. Developing the consciousness and adopting goals and activities and tasks in order for us to develop the consciousness is the correct direction in spiritual life. Because it's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And as I say sometimes, Prabhupada could have called this society anything he wanted. He could have called it the International Society for Kirtan. He could have called it the International Society for Book Distribution. He could have called it the International Society for Deity Worship. These are all aspects, but he did not. This society is distinct from any specific activity. All activities are meant to bring about Krishna consciousness. So it is Prabhupada's genius that he could encapsulate the essence of focus on Krishna, the essence of concentration upon Krishna as the goal. And so there are many different ways that saintly kings think, saintly persons think, and this is one example. Deep regret and a desire for rectification. Now, in the last paragraph of this purport, Prabhupada speaks that if we want peace and prosperity in the world, we should take lessons from this verse. Every state and every home must advance the cause of Brahminical culture. This is very interesting. Every state, every home. It's not just the few devotees at the temple who are supposed to be advancing Brahminical culture. Every single person is supposed to be doing that. And that means self-realization, cow protection, and contributing to a perfect civilization. So this is a duty of a devotee. So yesterday, of course, we celebrated the appearance of Sri Lord Narasingadev, and who better to take on as an example than his devotee? And he says, Naivo dvije paraduratyaya vaitaranyas tvadvirya gayana mahamrita magnachitta shochetato vimukachetasa indriyartha maya sukhaya bharam udvahato vimudhan. Prahlad Maharaj says, I am not at all afraid of material existence. Quite a bold statement. Now, if the ordinary conditioned soul makes such a statement, you know, that's not very impressive, because they definitely should be afraid of material existence. But coming from Prahlad Maharaj, that's something remarkable. He says, I'm not at all afraid of material existence, because wherever I stay, my thoughts are fully engaged in your activities and glories. No, the cause of my great distress is looking at these poor fools who are engaged in very heavy activities, bharam, he says. They're engaged in elaborate plans for sense gratification within this world. I am simply concerned out of love for them. That's Prahlad Maharaj's mood. He says there are many, many persons, everyone in this world, conditioned world, is engaged in activities just to expand the realm of sense gratification, expand the opportunities for enjoying the senses. And as we've discussed, it's a project that never ends. It just goes on unlimitedly. All of us have engaged in sense gratification for how many years? 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years maybe. And has the propensity for sense gratification decreased as a result of that? No, it hasn't. It never stops. It increases. Just as a fire when fueled with fuel increases, flames grow. So we know this is a useless project. And so we have to be very, very careful about trying to continue this project even more. So Prahlad Maharaj says that let's try and do something to counteract the idea that making elaborate industrial plans for sense gratification will bring us happiness. This is something that needs to be counteracted. It's not correct. This very heavy ugra karma that goes on, just in order to expand through economic development, wealth and opportunities, ultimately for sense gratification. It's a big, big problem. So that requires devotees to do something special. And therefore Prahlad Maharaj says, Prayena deva munaya swavimukti kama monam charanti vijanena parartanishta naitan vihaya kripanan vimamuksha eko nanyam tvadasya sharanam ramatonu pashye. He says something quite remarkable. He says, I can see in this world that there are many saintly persons. That's quite rare, right? You don't see many. But Prahlad Maharaj says, I see there are many saintly persons, but they are interested only in their own salvation, not desiring to stay in the towns and cities. They go to the Himalayas or some forest and adopt vows of silence, monavrat. But I do not wish to be liberated alone, he says, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that one cannot be happy unless one has taken shelter at your lotus feet. Therefore, I wish to bring all these people to shelter, sharanam, at your lotus feet. That's Prahlad Maharaj's mood. So there is the prospect of spiritual progress, the prospect of liberation, which is very much desirable, desired by people, by spiritual practitioners. But of those, there is only a small fraction who are actually interested in being liberated with everyone else. That is real compassion. That they do not want to just complete their process, go back home, leave everyone. They want to engage with the people who are engaged in these heavy ugra karma activities, thinking they will be happy through sense gratification. Prahlad Maharaj says, no, I know the only way that these people can become happy is by taking shelter at your lotus feet. That is the source of happiness. So this is a wonderful mood of compassion. This is the mood of, obviously, of this mission, to preach, to stay in this world, to live in the towns, in the cities, in the country, wherever, and to actually preach this message and help people understand this fact. Because this knowledge is in short supply. The internet is full of methods for engaging in sense gratification. Very little of it is how to control the senses by engaging them, as Maharaj Ambarish did, in the service of the Lord. This needs much more emphasis at this point. So we can get many, many insights from Parikshit Maharaj's status, and we also understand what a great person he was. People make mistakes. We are going to make mistakes in our life. Maybe we've made many already. And what's required is not that that itself is seen as the end goal, but rather that we appreciate that anyone engaged in Krishna consciousness is on the platform of saintliness, because they have adopted a path that will cure them, purify them of the tendency for sense gratification, which is a very, very noble aim. So if we bear that in mind, and then we assist those who go through difficulties, who make mistakes, we can actually also succeed. Now, I'll just say a few words also about today is the appearance day, as was mentioned this morning, of a number of great personalities. Srinivas Acharya, Madhavendra Puri, the appearance of Sri Radharaman. Now, Madhavendra Puri, we have discussed him at some length during the last year, during the Chaitanya Charitamrit classes. That whole pastime has been there with Madhavendra Puri, his glories, Ramuna and everything. So I'll just mention a few things about Srinivas Acharya, because he's a very, very special person. He's the person who wrote the Shat Goswami Ashtaka, you know, Krishna Kirtana Ga Nanartana Paro. And he speaks about, you know, the glories of the six Goswamis. And there are many, many interesting aspects in his sort of Krishna consciousness, which are particularly relevant at this time. He was, his parents were both great devotees. And they were great devotees of Lord Chaitanya. And at one point, they went to visit Mahaprabhu in Puri around the time of his sannyas, around that time. And Mahaprabhu made arrangements for them, gave them residential quarters, etc., in Puri. And then he told Govinda, his servant, that they don't know it, but they were praying to Lord Jagannath for a great Krishna conscious child, and very soon they will have that. And he said, tell them to go back home to Bengal, where they're from, and to get ready. And this was Srinivas Acharya, that when he was born, they could see he had all the symptoms of a Mahapurusha, great exalted person. And it's described in the various literatures, Bhakti Ratnakara and others, that he was the ecstasy, considered to be the ecstasy of Lord Chaitanya, ecstatic manifestation of Lord Chaitanya, very, very dear person. And Lord Chaitanya understood that this boy was exceptional. And he had developed the desire to meet Lord Chaitanya very much and to study Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit, because those two were famous, Lord Chaitanya and Gadadhar Pandit. There's a whole story. As he was growing up, his devotional qualities became more and more manifest. And then there were many other associates he was connected with, Narahari Sarkar and others. And then he was ordered or directed to go to meet Lord Chaitanya. And this is where the interesting aspect of his life can be seen. That he wanted to go to Lord Chaitanya, Gadadhar Pandit and others, but it didn't happen. Because he went to try to see Lord Chaitanya, but he heard Lord Chaitanya had passed away. And that was a shock for him. A tremendous shock. That was the first one. Then he went, and in Puri he met Gadadhar Pandit. And he said, finally I've met you, and I need to follow this order, and I would like to learn Bhagavatam from you. And Gadadhar Pandit said, yes, I'm very happy to meet you. In fact, Lord Chaitanya had asked me to teach you the Bhagavatam. And he said, but there is just one problem. And he took out his copy of the Bhagavatam, and he gave it to him, and Srinivas Acharya touched it to his head and immediately felt great ecstasy. But the problem was that he said, when I've been reading this Bhagavatam, I've been crying tears of ecstasy. And all the writing is now ineligible, cannot be read anymore. So although the spiritual potency was there, there was still a practical problem, what to do with the pages of the Bhagavatam that could not be read. So Gadadhar Pandit said, okay, I cannot teach you right now. Clearly you can see there's a problem. And he arranged for, again, Narahari Sarkar in Bengal to send a copy of the Bhagavatam. But he did not want to wait long, because he said, I am myself in deep separation of Lord Chaitanya, and there's no guarantee how long I will stay here. So he actually sent Srinivas Acharya back to Bengal to get this copy and bring it. You can imagine what happened. As he was coming, on the way back, Gadadhar Pandit left this world. It's the second tragedy. Just see how he's traveling. How he's traveling to try to meet the exalted acharyas, exalted persons from whom he can learn spiritual life. And Krishna's taking them away. Then after some time, he was traveling again. And he was always in the association of advanced Vaishnavas. And he had a dream from Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit appeared to him and said, just carry on, be strong. Mahaprabhu has made all arrangements for you. And then at another time, he was instructed to go to Vrindavan. Unknown to him, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami had already been given instructions by Lord Chaitanya that when this boy comes, you take care of him, instruct him, teach him how to be a devotee. And so they were all prepared. All of these four persons wanted to see him. All three specifically, Gadadhar Pandit, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. So Srinivas Acharya started to go. But as was his tendency, he stopped off in many places to visit the associates of Mahaprabhu. He visited Abhiram Thakur and the Jai Mangal. He got the three whips. He had an unusual way of bestowing pure love of Godhead. There was this special whip, and three lashes from the whip would bestow pure love of Godhead. So this whip was called Jai Mangal. The rather unconventional method for acquiring love of Godhead, not to be imitated. But he had those. And he stopped off in many places. He visited many of the associates of the Lord. The problem with that was that all of this added delay to his journey. And as he was approaching Vrindavan on the way, and in those days the travel was treacherous also. It took long time, months. 3 months prior to him arriving, Sanatana Goswami had left. Just as he arrived in Mathura, he heard that Rupa Goswami had left. All of them were finishing their leelas in this world because Lord Chaitanya had left. All these great persons who were lined up to help this young lad develop, and he was a youth at this point. And it's described that he spent all his time in great lamentation, great distress, in great separation, and not being able to have the chance to have the association of these saintly persons. Now, before Rupa and Sanatana Goswami left, they left instructions with Jiva Goswami. Now, we don't know how much longer we're going to stay here, but we want you to look after him. Teach him the philosophy. Teach him how to be a devotee. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami was there also. And he was instructed to guide him, to initiate him effectively. And so eventually when Srinivas arrived there, all these things gradually happened. They met him, they looked after him, and they taught him. He took initiation from Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And then many adventures happened. Srinivas Acharya is particularly famous for us because he's one of three persons, Narottam Das Thakur and Dukhi Krishna. He's part of that group of three who were ordered to take the literary works of the Goswamis back to Bengal. Because in Bengal there were many Vaishnavas, but the literary texts were not available. They were lacking. So therefore, Janava Mata and other saintly devotees had requested that these books be sent from Vrindavan, where they were compiled, to Bengal, where they could now be studied further and relished by the devotees. And so they were given this job by Jiva Goswami and others, that they should take these works of the Goswamis. Mahaprabhu stated that he had compiled these works himself and through Rupa Goswami specifically. Sanatana Goswami clearly also, Sambandha Acharya. But then the task of distributing them was to be Srinivas's task. And so we describe him fondly as this was the first Sankirtan party, where their job was to distribute the books. And there are many adventures associated with this, that the kings heard, there was a king en route near Bengal who heard there was a great treasure, and he arranged various dacoits to capture this. They thought it was gold and jewels, and in the end they ended up with a bag of books. But the king realized what a great problem this was. And then anyway, many mystical things happen. Srinivas appears to the king in a dream and says, I will come and visit you and collect them all, don't worry. And he initiates him. The king acts to propagate Krishna consciousness in a big scale in that whole area. It's a tremendous achievement. But all of this, his life was based around consecutive sorrow, one after the other. And how did he manage to retain strength and composure through this period? We're all experiencing at the moment saintly persons disappearing. We know just the other day, Pankajangri Prabhu, last year before, we lost Shruti Dharma Prabhu. So many other advanced persons who have acted as guides for us, who've been persons we look up to. Krishna is slowly but surely taking them away. We have to adopt some of the mood of Srinivas Acharya, the desire to keep going, the desire to try and make the most of it. Whoever is here, whoever is a saintly authority Acharya for us at this moment, make serious efforts to have their association. Don't take it casually. Make the effort. Even if the effort does not prove successful, still try. Definitely these are times when things are changing, and it would be a matter of great disservice to the acharyas who, after their leaving, if the disciples then give up. You know, like great persons, Bhaktisura Maharaj and others, what would be the worst thing for them is if their disciples gave up the process. They decided that this is too difficult, Krishna is taking away my sources of strength, why should I bother anymore? And then they'll start making mistakes. But they should take reassurance. Yes, make mistakes, but fix them. Rise up again. Keep trying to adopt the correct standard. Keep trying to be a Vaishnava. That's what will please these. These personalities that Srinivas Acharya had contact with, his dealings are very nice. He was very respectful to all of them. He was blessed by all of them. He searched for saintly persons and Krishna gave them to him. Gopal Bhatta Goswami, of course, is also, as is today is the appearance of Sri Radharaman, he is the Goswami who invited Sri Radharaman, who installed Sri Radharaman in Vrindavan. And he actually took Srinivas Acharya to Radharaman and asked them to give him his blessings, give him their blessings. Sri Radharaman is a beautiful temple in Vrindavan. If you go, definitely have a look. This is a beautiful black deity which is self-manifested from a Shalagram Shila. The Shila burst open and this beautiful deity came out. And if you ask the pujaris nicely, they'll show you at the back the markings where you can still see the Shila there. It's a very nice temple, and this is Gopal Bhatta Goswami's temple. So you can see somehow there's a transcendental link. Gopal Bhatta Goswami ends up as the guru of Sri Srinivas Acharya. His deity manifests on this day, which is also the appearance day of Srinivas Acharya. And there are so many nice interconnections between all our pastimes and stories. And with Parikshit Maharaj's his character, his strength, we can really just take, we can just be nourished by these things. We have to keep going. We have to take shelter of the Lord. We have to worship his appearance days. We have to treasure the association of the devotees. That's key. While we have it. It's not to be taken lightly. It's really a case of while we have it and while we want it. So I'll stop there. If there are any questions, comments?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. I had a question related to the verse you quoted from Prahlad Maharaj when he was asking for the welfare of all beings. And so it's a two-part question. What does it mean to liberate everyone else? Is the first part, and the second part is until what point or what degree can we hold up our own pursuit for liberation for the welfare of others? Till what point should we hold on and here to help others? And what means to help everyone else?
What does it actually mean to liberate everyone? What it really means is that we carry the essence of the potency of the acharyas to these people. We take the empowerment that Lord Chaitanya has given. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, the Goswamis, these were the vehicles, vessels, if you like. In some cases, described Srinivas as like the vessel for love of Godhead. And he invested the potencies on all these persons. And our aim is to carry their words, their teachings to whoever we meet. So that we bring that person directly into contact with whoever we're speaking to. The consequence of that is that that person undergoes a transformation in their consciousness. A seed of bhakti is planted. Some internal changes start to happen so that they start to move away from the path of sense gratification and move to the path of satisfying the senses of the Lord. That is what you can say is meant by liberation. That when one is actually connected to the service of the Lord, they are liberated from the highly entrapping and dangerous world of sense gratification. So you're liberated from that. You're no longer enslaved. People want to be free, but their concept of freedom is to be more enslaved to the senses. That's not freedom. So you can only assist someone in their liberation when you take them away from that entire concept. And of course, then naturally, when one is liberated, this world is no longer a fit place for them. And therefore, in due course of time, as they leave this body, they'll be in the spiritual world. So liberation has those two kind of dimensions. But really being connected to the lotus feet of the Lord, taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, is really the task that Prabhupada has given us. And so that is in one sense the goal. That's what we're trying to do. And as to the question as to what extent should we suppress or put aside or maybe not emphasize so much our own progress in order to assist the progress of others, well, the two things are not contradictory. You cannot assist anyone else's progress unless you yourself have progressed. Otherwise, it's theoretical at best, and second best, it's misleading. You can only really say with conviction to a person, take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, if you yourself have done that. Now, with Mahaprabhu, his mission is very interesting because he allows both of those things to happen simultaneously. Jare dekho tara kahe Krishna upadesh, amara agyaya guru tare idesh. He says that whoever you see, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. That is the bona fide function of a guru, to tell them of Krishna. And what Mahaprabhu also does is that when someone develops a desire to preach, Mahaprabhu allows that person's advancement to also take place. So it's not actually conventionally the two-step process. It is kind of both steps are still there, but they happen simultaneously. And that's only possible in the Harinam Sankirtan movement. It's not possible through any other process of Vedic scholarship, etc. Because that definitely requires you to become a great liberated scholar, a highly versed in Vedanta, and then eventually you might, you know, be able to instruct some others. Here, whatever extent of advancement we've made, we try to use that to please Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu supplies all the shakti, all the nectar, that is more than enough for us to feel fully fulfilled. Thank you. Anyone else?
Hare Krishna Babaji, thank you for a brilliant class. I have one question, which is, how do we maximize our opportunity to take shelter of like greatly saintly people? Sometimes access is denied, maybe due to our gender or some other etiquette rule, but we have a desire to serve them. So how do you maximize the opportunity to get their association?
Yeah, sometimes it is felt that access is denied. We do feel that sometimes. We feel that there are certain devotees who are always hanging around Guru Maharaj. And maybe they have access to him and we never get the chance. That is it's a common feeling, actually. It's something where we learn to treasure, actually, not just the frequency of meetings or the frequent or the aspiration for yet another event or the aspiration for yet another episode or another chance, but rather we actually treasure whatever we have, whatever opportunities have been given. And my Guru Maharaj said this, he said this directly, that yes, it is not that we have to keep doing more and more things, keep attending more and more events. We, as devotees, you know, we have access to so many events and so many different things are going on. This yatra is there, this thing is there, this is another opportunity, this is another sangha, this is another disciples gathering, this is another this, that. You can spend a career just jumping from one place to the other. But it's potentially possible, I'm not saying that's what happens, but it's potentially possible that we could just be taken away by the act of just being in a place. We don't do the internal work based upon the instructions we receive in those places. Even one moment of association with a saintly person is actually enough for our complete perfection. So Maharaj was saying that treasure what moments you have had. Everyone will have had some moments with their spiritual master, with saintly persons. Some moments, maybe it was a small period. Some may have had more. It's not a competition. It's definitely not judged by who had more time with the Guru. We see some of the strongest disciples of Prabhupada now, today, are those who had very little direct personal time with him. and some others who had a lot of time left the path, sadly. It's the amount of time is not the criteria. Rather, the depth of absorption and actually taking on the commitment is the bigger point. In Srinivasacharya's case, you can see that he didn't even get that association that he wanted. And these three, four people, he didn't get it at all. Jiva Goswami didn't have extensive direct contact with Lord Chaitanya either. He heard from the empowered representatives of Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. And that is actually our progress, that Lord Chaitanya also assigned different devotees to different numbers of his disciples, different members, different disciples to take care of. He gave some to Govinda, some to his secretary, some to, you know. And so we ultimately have to do what pleases the Lord. But the Lord is always very pleased when we follow his process. So it's always best to just focus on the idea of the precious moments that we have had. Gender, other things like that are never a barrier. Yes, there are definitely differences of etiquette, conduct, depending on our gender, our physical body, our mentality, even according to our varna and ashram. There are different ways that we are supposed to deal in a civilized society with other members. These considerations are never to be ignored, never neglected on the basis of we're all equal as the spirit soul. But they never actually cause an impediment to the spiritual progress of anyone. If we actually follow according to our situation, status, gender, whatever criteria you want to use, if we actually act correctly within that capacity and make the correct approach to either Krishna, the spiritual master, the deities, the devotees, whoever, then even if the way that is done is not the same as another person next to us, the potential for us to benefit from that is just the same. Just the same. And we see this in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, that he was very strict with his conduct. But that's not to say that anyone who had his darshan, who had some contact with him, who heard him, who watched him singing, dancing at Rathayatra, didn't get benefit. Now they all didn't do the same thing. Some of them were twirling around with Lord Chaitanya in the middle. You know, some of them were doing that. Others were offering obeisances from a distance. That's equally valid. So we should not judge at all by activities that are performed. It is a fallacy to think, this person is doing this activity, why don't I also do that activity? The choice for doing activities is not determined by what I feel I should be doing at all. That is actually an element of culture. Culture which is rapidly disappearing, but culture means we prioritize duty above desire. We desire to do something because we think it's what we want, or whatever the reason is, we would like to do it so we feel empowered or enlivened or whatever. Ultimately, these things are totally insignificant. Whether you feel empowered or enlivened at this moment in time is completely irrelevant. If you've transgressed culture or acted to bring down culture in order that you can feel enlivened and empowered, you've actually missed the point. Because it is by the dutiful, culture is all about duty. It is by the dutiful execution of culture that one attracts Krishna. Krishna has got a different expectation from each person. Some of those expectations are you can say, formulated according to our situation, according to our different statuses, whatever it is. Some of those are formulated according to that, the mode in which you would like that person to behave. Others are molded by one's advancement. You know, the level of advancement one has, the degree of fixed concentration one has for Krishna. Sometimes even the demons have a level of concentration that, you know, exceeds the devotees, according to Narad Muni. Katamopi navena syat panchanam purusham prati tasmat kenap upayena mana krishne niveshayat. He said, somehow or other, one has to develop that concentrated focus on the Supreme Lord. Mana krishne niveshayat. One has to capture the Lord with such intense concentration. And he says that these troublesome individuals, You know, other great persons, Shishupal, Dantavakra, somehow persons like these, they manage to attract it. But you see, foolish persons like Vena, who's an atheist, even though they're inimical to the Lord, they never develop that concentrated mentality towards the Lord. So he's glorifying those who are connected to the Lord even inimically, above and beyond those who are just atheistic to the Lord. So when we actually neglect culture, neglect duty, that is a little bit of an atheistic mentality. It is a sort of a sense that the Lord's program, the Lord's plan, the Lord's creation, his establishment of rules is something I can neglect if I want. So we have to just look at it from all those sides. Yes, we focus, we treasure what we have. And then we also understand that everyone is different. And there is a certain advancement that one makes simply by following culture. The gopis conducted themselves in a certain manner. They didn't conduct themselves the same way as the gopas did. They are celebrated through the pages of the Bhagavatam as being the topmost worshippers of the Lord, the topmost servitors of the Lord. The great saints, Narad Muni, others celebrate them and look and hold them up as examples. But they didn't do exactly the same as the others. So that's not the criteria. But definitely we are, I think, treasuring each moment with saintly persons is especially important at this time. Is that okay? Okay, thank you very much. Oh, David, you have a question? Okay.
The question I have is about when the king was converted and it's seen a great like achievement, and I was wondering how come Krishna consciousness diminished until the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that it went from such heights down, you know, to very low standing.
Well, what can happen with the potency of a king or an administrator who is favorable is that Krishna consciousness can spread en masse to a lot of people. And a lot of people can take benefit when there is an organized, managed program of, you know, prasadam distribution, Krishna katha, functions, festivals. Huge amounts of people can participate in those. Not all of those will be necessarily highly advanced, sincere devotees. Still, despite all of that, it may be, you know, persons who, for example, come to one of our festivals. Many people will join the Ratayatra, but they might not adopt the full practice after that point. So when you have a great propagation, everyone benefits. But it's not that they immediately are transformed from the low level to a very high level instantly. But they all have the chance to make advancement. And in their next life, they take on from that point. So you don't see it necessarily in the chronology as you would see. The other thing is, of course, as Kali Yuga progresses and as the degradation of the Brahmin culture effectively continued, so no place is immune from that. Those sincere devotees who were part of that whole propagation, they remained sincere. It's not that everyone was degraded. There were sincere devotees, and they were the ones who were lamenting for the lack of the Lord's presence. Advaita Acharya was still there. He was a very advanced devotee. Well, his status is different, but there are numerous others as well who were present during that entire period of degradation, you could say before Lord Chaitanya, but then also after Lord Chaitanya, as you say, until Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So while Lord Chaitanya was there, it's kind of like he supercharged that space of time. And then afterwards, things slipped away again. And just as today's episode, this thing with Shamik Rishi cursing Parikshit Maharaj, which comes in next verses, these were all the beginning bits of Kali Yuga, after the disappearance of Krishna. When Krishna had disappeared, Kali Yuga started to appear. And this behavior through the Brahmana who then curses the king is one of the early indicators is described in the Bhagavatam. one of the early indicators of the onset of Kali. So whether it's Krishna or whether it's Lord Chaitanya, when they go, it's not desirable, really. There's a naturally the groundswell of misbehavior will arise again. But for the saintly devotees, they don't participate in it. They remain saintly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.